Registration is now open for ACRM 2021. Registering for our virtual annual conference gives you access to the content for over 6 months. That's over 400 hours of CME CEUs. Go to acrm.org/register to check out the growing online program and see all of our great registration options.
Welcome to episode 36 of the Rehab Cast from the Archives of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. Now, herewith is a rare single interview episode of our podcast. It features Irene Battle on her work delving into the challenging problem of Parkinson's disease-related dysphagia. Dr. Battle and colleagues in Ireland and Italy conducted a systematic review of biofeedback interventions for the problem. Dr. Battle, thanks for joining us today on the RehabCast.
Hi, thank you so much.
You and your colleagues have authored in the journal a paper discussing dysphagia and dysphagia therapy in the Parkinson's disease population. Specifically, the title is Interventions Involving Biofeedback to Improve Swallowing in People with Parkinson's Disease and Dysphagia, a Systematic Review. So a deep look at the literature such as it exists. So let's start with kind of the broader view. Dysphagia is a rather central feature of Parkinson's disease, is it not?
Yeah, indeed. Like swallowing problems are really one of the main features, and when symptoms of this population is one of the main causes of death in this population. And basically, because they have problems with sensory, but also motor weakness. So both of these components are so important for swallowing. Thinking about when you eat, you smell, you taste. So those parts are really important for eating, but also the strength of your lips and cheeks and also the pharyngeal muscles. So, yeah, dysphagia and swallowing problems are really important in this population.
Yeah. So the general kind of skeletal muscle movements might get all of the attention and walking and so forth, but this is actually the thing that really might kill people in terms of aspiration pneumonias and so forth, and obviously just really increases the medical complexity as people start to have more difficulty swallowing and might need tube feedings or other things and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Like pneumonia caused by swallowing problems are really one of the main causes of death in this population. And also not only death, but also they have problems to take, for example, pills. Mm. Many studies show that sometimes they have difficulties to swallow down the big pills they have to take. And some studies show that the pills deposit in the vallicula, so in the pharynx. And so it is important to start treatment before that really severe signs of dysphagia occur in this population.
Now, biofeedback is increasingly popular in all realms of our rehabilitation, so not surprising that it's entering the Parkinson's disease literature as well. Although I think from your experience doing this review paper, we might say that maybe it's surprising that more hasn't been done at this point. You guys did a pretty extensive search, and in fact, your inclusion criteria, it looks like, were pretty broad for any of the work out there involving biofeedback techniques in dysphagia in the PD population. And tell us what you found generally in the course of doing that search.
Yeah, basically, like our approach was that biofeedback, it is one of the key components for rehabilitation in Parkinson's disease, because helping like basic ganglia are fundamental for motor learning, and providing external feedback is really important, for example, for the gait. And lots of study has been done in for limb rehabilitation. However, for swallowing, there are not really lots of studies like for limb rehabilitation. That's why we wanted to broaden our criteria. But what we have, I think, what the main difference, the key component of our systematic review is that we look at biofeedback specifically, differently from all the other studies. For example, and I, I would like to mention the study of Dr. Megidi Hakabi, which was published. The main author is Attu Korala, and the last, but was this study was carried out in the lab of Megidi Hakabi, and was published in Archives, Physical Medical Rehabilitation. Basically, Megidi really did something really interesting, said that biofeedback is just a tool to make people aware of what they're doing. So the main component is the treatment that you're doing. And then the tool that you can use could be really important, but it is really what you're doing that makes the difference.
Sure, yeah. And probably, I mean, obviously, before we're even using the biofeedback techniques, the speech therapist there with the patient is giving the patient that biofeedback in a way, even if it's not something that's like, you know, maybe as fancy as these EMG devices and so forth, that's in large part what the therapist is attempting to do in real time, give them extra cues and so forth, right?
Yeah, that's really important. And yeah, I think that one other important thing of like biofeedback is also the frequency of, like, the type of biofeedback. I mean, like, also verbal, it could be a biofeedback. But the intensity could be randomized or could be, like, scheduled, like, or always. A biofeedback could be done, like, for the results or for the performance. And that really make the difference. Sometimes if you are learning new thing, I was trying to myself, if people are just pushing me with all the feedback while I was trying to understand something, for example, I'm rowing in Venice and there is this old guy who tried to teach me. And it was like keeping me like all the feedback, one followed the other. I was like completely like, I didn't know what to do, but instead. And so I thought to my patients, sometimes, you know, we just give too many feedback and they could not realize what they are doing. Yeah. So I think this systematic review emphasizes this. You need to maybe sometimes shut up or not give too many feedback. Make them aware of what they are doing. Yeah. So maybe it's better to give a feedback on the performance and not just giving a feedback on the goal, on the result. Many of like strength treatment, just ask them to just push. Yeah. To give, instead in Parkinson, we want to work in coordination. Swallowing is really a coordination task. So maybe it's better giving feedback on performance.
Okay. So
I might ask your question.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And you've given a great new tip for other speech therapists out there. Try not to be as effusive as a Venetian rowing instructor.
Yeah.
Try to restrain yourself. Okay. All right. Very good. Now, as you looked at all these papers, you know, over 1,000 and so forth, I mean, I keep paring down to those that you can actually look at for the for this narrative review. And ultimately, it's only 4 papers. What's like the main thing that whittles it down so dramatically that there's only 4, one of which isn't even published, is, you know, an educational thesis and so forth.
And that's also something that really also upset me, because at the beginning, if you look at as I mentioned, if you look like other, for example, limb rehabilitation balance for Parkinson, there are many, many, many studies, many systematic review and meta-analysis you can find, but for swallowing, not. And maybe is one problem of your swallowing rehabilitation that maybe has been just is something that has been recently, it's really harder to actually to give a feedback, internal feedback for swallowing, because it's an internal function. So I think that is the main problem of our study. My criteria for this systematic review were really broad. So I just look at Parkinson and swallowing. So I, in the basket, was full of other type of like intervention, not using biofeedback.
Mm-hmm.
I think that now the literature, recent literature, start to use the understanding the role of giving external cues for swallowing, help them to increase the imaginary, like using cortical function to see what they are doing while they're swallowing and help them. Something really recent, actually.
Fascinating. Of those 4 papers, 2 of them were similar, you know, surface EMG types of studies that perhaps obviously focusing on different techniques. And one of them involved this inflated air balloon in the anterior neck to get feedback in another video.
Yeah, that was a little bit strange. They were really, really different. Two of them used SurfEMG biofeedback, which basically is like a SurfEMG attached to them under the chin, because this area is, when you're swallowing, the submental muscle have the higher bone to move up and forward. So we were like collecting those information. They were collecting those information to understand if the people were swallowing. The other, the study Felix was, they attached a balloon because they used the pressure of the thyroid system, and it was a case series. Another study that was really interesting, but a little bit maybe invasive. They used a fibro endoscopic. So a tube, a really small tube, used for fibro endoscoping, like instrument evaluation to understand. I think that, the SurfEMG is not invasive as fibro endoscopic assessment. So it's something that it could be useful also in clinical, but also at home to the patient. So it could be really like something that it could be done also maybe in telerehabilitation. Future studies should look at.
Yeah, and as far as surface EMG, of course, there are commercial companies getting involved in that space now as well. We're out of the box on training therapists to do it, vital stem and so forth. So definitely more popular in that regard, and I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot more research in that direction. I was curious though about the Manner study with the patients looking at video of themselves and swallowing in the past, though. I mean, is that, I guess it meets some criteria of definition of biofeedback, but maybe not others. Certainly, it's obviously not real-time biofeedback. So a little bit more challenging to in that way. But was that study successful?
Well, that study was really successful, and is the one of the study you use instrumental evaluation to look like pre and post. So they were like objective measurements, which really, and they showed that really less pharyngeal residues after the treatment. And the main, the videos help patient to record how to use compensative maneuvers during swallowing. Some people need to, for example, to put the chin down for swallowing, or to use other kind of really specific, or maybe hold the breath during swallowing. And they were this video helped them to record how they have to move the pharyngeal and the head or the neck during swallowing. So I think it's really like interesting study. However, it's something that is not really real time. So, and in Parkinson is a neurodegenerative disease. So we expect they are changing, and it's better to be focused each time.
You noticed a general trend with some studies putting more emphasis on the skill or technique of the swallowing, and others more direct strengthening. It sounds like you favor the skill generally as being more important for the Parkinson's movement disorder in particular.
There is a big debate on this, but we need to really thinking about what is swallowing. It's based on coordination of different muscles. Coordination not only with the muscles, but as I mentioned before, with the sensory, with the taste, with, for example, there is when we are eating, there is more saliva. So there are different components that that works together during swallowing. And if we just work on specific muscle, just to increase the strength of say, specific muscle, maybe we are not working on the function. And there is the first principle of neuroplasticity is use it or lose it. If you do not use, you're going to lose that function. So it's better to work on coordination. And then also coordination could have an effect on strength of the muscles. Is well documented.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you're continuing to do research activities now with a couple of different institutions. Would you tell us about projects you're working on currently?
Yeah, there are different projects still on swallowing. First, there is this main project using surfing biofeedback for mm-hmm. Parkinson's disease. And yeah, I'm working with Trinity College of Dublin for this. And we are recruiting different kind of patients. We did a pilot study, was the end of my PhD, and we look at how surfing biofeedback with skilled treatment was really helpful for that population uses instrument evaluation. And then because I'm working as a clinician, and in the last year, I work in COVID with COVID patients for rehabilitation. So I'm working also to help people to regain swallowing function and voice in that population.
Fantastic. Yeah, we've certainly seen a few of those cases at Shepherd Center here too, as I'm sure most rehabilitation hospitals are working on that population now as well and seeing many of the same types of deficits that we see on our other patient populations for sure. Well, I think that's an excellent taster or teaser or perhaps an overview of this narrative review of Parkinson's disease, dysphagia, and biofeedback. I thank you so much for joining us today from Venice, Italy.
Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate your appearance on the podcast, and best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And that's it for this shorter episode of the Rehab Cast. Please like and share with your colleagues and join us soon for more insight from the people behind the research and the rehabilitation field's top journal.